Can you hear me? Okay. I bet after everybody drinking prune juice, the spirit was really moving. Later. Jerry's already giving me the hand.
You are plum silly.
Oh, I get it. It took me just a second. Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I hope that you had a good Thanksgiving and you got to spend good time with your families. If you're visiting with us, we're really glad that you're here. I am sorry. Apologize right up front. You're here on a day when the scrubs are playing. All of the starters are gone, so they pulled me off of the bench and brought me in to do this sermon. But you're lucky because you get to hear my very first sermon.
All right.
You're probably about to hear my very last sermon. All in the same day, the same time. Depending on how this goes. I'll have you out of here in 3 or 4 hours. It's been 49 years, so I got a lot to say, but no. I have a lot of memories here growing up at Eastside. One of my earliest memories is sitting probably about where James is now and in my dad's lap, leaning over and listening to Sam Kitchens preach. Some of you remember him. We're here at the time. One of my strong memories that I have. It looked a little different in here back then. We had, does anyone remember the color of the carpet? Red. Original carpet was red. We had stadium seating, the chairs that were all natural wood with fold-up seats and arms on them. These two rooms weren't here. The room to my right, the room to my left, as we always called them. These were lecture rooms that they added later on, and the seating went from wall to wall, all the way around. What's that? We filled them sometimes. That's what I was about to say. I can't remember the number, maybe 700 that it would hold or more. And I know that in my lifetime, I remember having a Sunday with 450 people. Mike Monroe did a attendance drive one time. So after that, well, the only thing that was carpeted were the aisles. Underneath the seats, we had tile. So when your mom gave you that quarter to put in the collection plate, if you dropped it with the slope and everything, you could make it all the way to the front if it hit just right. And you got extra points for that if you missed all the feet and chairs. Somebody dropped an entire collection plate one time. And the quarters and dimes were just running everywhere. That probably happened more than once. But after that, it was green carpet. And then we switched to what you see now. So things have changed a little bit. If you want to see the original seats, go down to the Ritz Theater on the square. Those came out of this auditorium. So they're still being used. So this is pretty riveting stuff so far, right? The history of carpet at Eastside. I said all of those things for a reason, just to kind of point out that there's been a lot of change over the years. Some of that change is cosmetic, but I think the bigger change has probably been with us and the way we see things and the way we do things. Some of our things that were important to us maybe are not so important anymore. I mentioned, well, this update to the auditorium was done in probably 92. I know it was done before 93 because Tressa and I were the first wedding in here after they redid the auditorium. And so that was in 93, a long time ago now. But what is interesting about that, at that time, we wanted to have a song with instrumental music played at our wedding. We had to go to the eldership and ask if we could have a song with instrumental music played in here. Isn't that interesting? I don't think you'd have a problem now. You wouldn't even have to ask because we have instrumental music. Not today, but if you were here last week, we had instrumental music during our Sunday morning services. So some things have changed. Lauren, I noticed you doing the prayer this morning. That probably wouldn't have happened in 1993. So some things have changed. Yeah. Some things have changed for the better, right? The things that are important to us change. I remember when we started using praise teams. This is funny because today we didn't use praise teams. But I remember that first Sunday that we had praise teams, I was a little uncomfortable. I don't know if anybody else felt that way, but I didn't know about that because that was something new. Now, I think I prefer that. No, not any comment on what happened today, but it was beautiful singing. But I think it enhances our worship, and I would miss it if we didn't have that. One other funny story, I think when I was in eighth grade, there was going to be a dance, and my dad was an elder here, and I asked if I could go to the dance, and his first reaction was no. And we talked about that for quite a while, and had conversations, and finally he agreed to let me go. And I remember him driving me to the dance, he and my mom, and the car was quiet. You could tell he was having a hard time processing that. What he didn't know is that I don't really dance much. I have no rhythm, so it wasn't really a big deal. But what's funny about that is later in my dad's life, he was taking dance classes out at the college and Western swinging it up all over the West Texas area and just having the time of his life. So it's interesting how things change. I know for sure that we have moved away from some of our legalistic thinking and moved more towards embracing grace and embracing forgiveness and love. And those are good things. There's been lots of changes. Those things have taken place over decades here. And there are changes that have happened more recently in the last 3, 4, 5 years that are happening faster. Things that we've gone through. If you remember, after Steve Barrett left, we hired Jeff Dunn. And Jeff was so good at helping us reach the community, setting up events where we got out into the community, helping the schools, helping different places, bringing people here. And I really felt like we had some wind in our sails for a while. And then Jeff decided to move back closer to family. And I was a little upset about that. I think a lot of people were. But then God sent us Matt and Jennifer. And Matt may be the most talented human I've encountered in my lifetime. I've never met someone that could debate theology with you, preach a sermon, play any instrument that you hand him, work any math problem, and rebuild the engine in your car and throw a set of brakes on it in no time. He really could do everything. I kind of hate for that deep down, but not really. I was jealous, though. He is a very talented guy, and he had a love for people that were hurting and people that needed help. He was such a big part of the CR program here, and he did so much to help us move in that direction of helping those in need. And then I thought things were really going well. We had some lack in us, right? And then COVID came. And we went from meeting together to watching a service on Facebook. And everything changed. And so we kind of worked our way through that for a little while. And were able to come back, but it just wasn't the same. We had 20, 30, maybe 40 people at the most. And you could feel the absence of those that weren't ready to come back yet. And some have never come back. So that's been tough. We worked for a while, and we started to make a little progress, and it started to feel good again. And then Matt and Jennifer decided to move back to Missouri. So another big change. And I've heard some people describe where we're at now as being in limbo. That's what it feels like. I understand that feeling, where it just, what comes next? When are they getting here? What are we going to do? It feels there's a lot of uncertainty. Well, life is full of change. When those type of things happen, it leaves us not really knowing how to react. Sometimes we just sort of freeze in place. Change is difficult, but it's inevitable. We know that's the one thing you can count on, and is that everything's going to change. The way we I know most of you will remember Mark McCormick, and when he's battling pancreatic cancer, that he stood right up here and gave us a sermon, the last one that he would give, and he said to all of us, "Things change." Does anybody remember that? And he said it over and over again, "Things change." I think he was referencing another sermon he had heard, but he was living it. And he was trying to relate to us that just how quickly your life can go from normal to completely upside down. And that things change. Things have changed at Eastside, and they're still changing. COVID didn't just change your life here at Eastside. Some people lost their jobs. Some people were working from home. Their children were staying home, taking the school on their computers, watching classes. Everything about life changed. We've been through a lot of change. But God doesn't change. It is the one constant in our life. The way we help ourselves get through these times is that we focus on that one thing that never changes. Hebrews 13:8 tells us that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. So that's one of the ways we help ourselves work through that change and that uncertainty. I started thinking about some of the epic stories in the Old Testament, and my mind kind of settled on Joseph. And I know you know the story, but think about all that he went through and how his life was just turned upside down. He goes from being his father's favorite son to being a slave. And then he finds favor from Potiphar, and he goes from being a slave to being in charge of Potiphar's entire household. And then you know what happens with Potiphar's wife. So he goes from being in charge of the household to being a prisoner. And soon finds favor with the warden, so now he's in charge of the prison. Soon he's interpreting dreams, and a couple of years later, he's interpreting dreams for Pharaoh. And now he's elevated to the most powerful man in Egypt, save Pharaoh himself. It's amazing the amount of change in his life, ups and downs. He climbs his way to the top, and he's knocked back down to the bottom. Over and over again. And I think it would have been easy if you were Joseph to just say, "Ha, I'm done. I think I'll just mail it in and stay a slave and live out my life. And, you know, I don't understand what's going on." But Joseph didn't quit. And I noticed something when I was reading the story that it said that Potiphar and the warden both said, The way it reads, it says, they did not concern themselves with anything that Jacob, that was under Joseph's care. The only thing Potiphar worried about was what he was going to eat. So not only did he push through it, but he did it in a way that was full of excellence. Now, yes, he was favored by God, and God may have had his hand on the scales a little bit, but Joseph still had to do the work. He still had to put in the time and the effort, and he kept believing, he kept having faith. And he didn't know. You know, it didn't matter what the situation was, whether he was a slave or he was ruling Egypt. He used the gifts that God gave him, and he went to work. He didn't know why the things that were happening to him were happening. He didn't understand at the time, but he did when his brothers showed up trying to buy food. And at the end of the story, when he reveals himself to them, he says, "Don't blame yourself. You didn't send me here. God sent me here. He sent me here ahead of you to save lives, to preserve the remnant." So then he understood, and he was able to see how God was working through everything that he went through, the ups and the downs, the challenges that he faced. So he just kept going. He kept moving. Have any of you seen Band of Brothers? The series that was made about Easy Company and World War II? Well, there's a scene in there that I wanted to share with you. They're in Bastogne, Easy Company, and they're right outside of this little town called Foy, and they have to go in and take this town and clear out this town. There's German artillery there. Well, the leader of Easy Company is Lieutenant Dyke. And Lieutenant Dyke is not mentally stable, I guess you would say, or prepared for this to be leading Easy Company. He has trouble making decisions. He doesn't communicate well. He's kind of like an empty suit, they call him. So there's no one to really take his place, so Captain Winters is forced to let him take the company in. And as he's going in, he gets hay and he just stops. And he freezes. And he says, "Everybody stop, everybody stop." Well, the Germans begin to zero in on them. When they stop, they're sitting ducks. They're an easy target. And Captain Winters is on the edge of the battlefield yelling at his top of his lungs, "Get moving! Get moving!" And he's just yelling it over and over. And he starts to run out on the battlefield himself, and they pull him back because he's the commander. So his only option is to go grab Lieutenant Spears from one of the other companies. And he tells him, "Get in there and relieve Dyke, and you take that company in." So Lieutenant Spears is this almost mythical figure that, for whatever reason, has no fear. He tells someone earlier in the movie, "You know, the secret to this is that you're already dead. You just don't know it." And so he just accepted that fact, and he wasn't afraid, and he takes the company in. But over and over, he just keeps yelling at them, "Get moving, get moving." Well, I don't know exactly where all of you are at and how you feel, whether you feel like we're in limbo or we're in a holding pattern, whether that has caused any issues for you, whether it's something that is holding you back. But what I would say to all of us, I don't know if our Lieutenant Spears is on his way, if Tim's going to be the guy to take us in and lead us. I hope that he is. But should it matter? Doesn't our mission stay the same no matter who's leading us? Our mission is to find, save the lost, to care for those that are hurting, to teach them about Jesus and baptize them in his name. That mission will never change. uncertainty and change can leave us stagnant, can leave us exposed or an easy target. So I would just say to us, maybe we need to get moving. Okay? Maybe it's time for each of us to examine where we're at, to just spend some time in prayer and ask yourself, am I using the gifts that God's given me for His glory, doing everything that I can do? And if the answer to that question, if you tell yourself the answer is no, then what will you do next? How will you get there? What are you going to do? Well, I don't know the exact answer, but I don't think it has to be anything big. I think you just need to get moving. Maybe you walk up to Luke when I'm done and you say, Luke, I'd like to teach a class for 3 weeks. Luke's already smiling. Do you know what that would do for someone that's been teaching for years? Just knowing they had a 3-week break coming up. And it's something so easy that any of us can do, right? That's just one example of 100. But we have to get out of the habit of waiting. And whether you are, maybe you're someone that's been in the battle, that's been pushing forward, that's been moving, and you feel like there's not been any change, that it's not making a difference, I would say to you, keep pushing forward. Amen. Keep pushing forward, because you don't know. Maybe God has you right where you are because you're saving lives. You may not ever know the impact that you had on a child, on someone in this community, someone at CR, someone that needs to know love and help. But God has a plan for us, just like He did for Joseph. Romans, and he'll be there to help us through it. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. God is working for our good. And He will help us. He does have a plan. And if you need help getting moving, come see one of our elders. Come see me. Come see Luke. We can find something that fits your gifts, and we can help get things moving again here. If you need to pray with someone, if you have any concerns, then we invite you to come down now, and we'll pray with you as we stand and sing.